One of the great tragedies in American history was the 1692 witch hysteria in Salem, Massachusetts. Tragically, about 20 alleged witches were hanged, many of whom professed their innocence. What is amazing about this ugly episode is that some people, such as Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard in their Killing the Witches book, by the way, a series of books I've enjoyed overall, I did not like that particular one. In effect, what they do is they make the witchcraft trials of 1692 as representative of the Puritans and their strict religion, as opposed to being aberrational to the Puritans at large. Dr. Paul Jaley is a Christian educator, a pastor, and an author. He's one of the foremost authorities alive on the Pilgrims and their spiritual cousins, the Puritans. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Dr. Paul Jaley, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Very good to be with you, Jerry.
Sure. And I have to say, I am a big fan of Bill O'Reilly, Martin Dugard, and Killing This, Killing That. I was shocked, though, with the Killing the Witches one. I thought, oh, my goodness. They got some of the, you know, a lot of details wrong in this particular one. But apart from them, what do you want to say about the whole Salem witchcraft trial? Is it, you know, exceptional or, you know, aberrational, or is it more like the rule with the Puritans?
Right. Well, when I first started researching around 1992, at the time of the 300th anniversary, the tercentenary of the Salem witch trials, I spent many hours and days and weeks in the archives researching the individuals. When I started to research the 20 individuals that have been put to death, reading their biographies and whatnot, and reading through the actual trial transcripts, I began to recognize something very clearly. At least 10 out of the 20 that were put to death were leading Christians with great testimonies and with great character witnesses. So I recognized something of a great travesty had taken place with the Salem witch trials. Now, many people today blame the Puritans and basically simply say that, see, it was because they had laws against witchcraft. And because of those things, and this would be the case if the Christian right ever took over, that there would be all this tyranny of religion. And that's the only reason that this was happened. And in part, it's often built on the premise that there is no such thing as witchcraft and no such thing as real spiritual warfare. It's all a hoax. But, you know, when you read through these transcripts, I began to recognize, no, there was something very different here. And very simply put, the Puritans came over and brought with them, as the Pilgrims did, the common law. And one of the reasons that they came over here to practice Christianity and to form a commonwealth built on biblical law, which to their understanding, of course, at the time was common law itself, that germ of common law that they brought is where we get the idea that one is innocent until proven guilty. It's where we get the idea nobody can be put to death without two or three eyewitnesses to a crime. It's the very origin of that. And so, therefore, when we look at this whole travesty, we could summarize it and say, for 9 months or more, the Puritans abandoned the very common law they brought here because they treated people as guilty till proven innocent. They took dreams and visions, spectral evidence, which it does not have two or three eyewitnesses, and they used that in court to the chagrin of many of the pastors. And the pastors who cautioned the judges, you can't allow this. And so they violated their own laws during that time period. And that's why it would be an exception. But anyone can be deceived, and we have it even today. In most cultures, you can always identify one or two, maybe sometimes three, key areas of accusation where due process goes out the window, and you have to prove your innocence rather than someone having to prove your guilt. And this is the key, because the book of Deuteronomy and the Old Testament make it very clear that you are to be treated as innocent until proven guilty. This is what the law of liberty is all about.
Okay, so what actually caused that 9 months of darkness? And where do Increase Mather and his son Cotton Mather fit in this whole mix?
Sure.
And who were they?
So I would say, first of all, if you look into the scriptures, one of the things that Increase Mather, Cotton Mather, and the clergy of the day, is they held a very standard biblical interpretation on the existence of the devil, the existence of demonic spirits, the existence of supernatural warfare, and the fact that we can gain victory over the demonic kingdom, the evil kingdom, in our day, in our time, by following Jesus and following the precepts of his word. And that the big door to opening yourself up to demonic oppression is sin, unconfessed sin. And that door can be shut with the confession of sin to Jesus directly. Now, you see, what happened in Salem was an unfortunate set of circumstances where two family clans, the Porters and the Putnams, began to have acrimony against each other in the town of Salem over land rights and over land genealogy and where land was going to come down in their legacy and their ideas. And therefore, around the dinner table, these parents would speak in front of their children. This is the typical thing of gossip. If people are naming other people, children get bitterness. They get angry. They get an anger toward those other individuals on the other side, whether it's a Porter clan or a Putnam clan. And think of a small village. Everybody knows who's related to who. And so this sinful, unconfessed sin of gossip and those begins to grow. The children's parents are not disciplining them properly. In other words, I don't mean by physical disciplining. They're not keeping them from different things. And in the very basement of the pastor, Pastor Samuel Parris, these girls, by one of the servants that was in his house, were introduced to the dark arts and the occult. And they began to play with these things. And all of a sudden began to exhibit symptoms and manifestations that were pretty peculiar. Their body parts going into ways in which it was impossible, as doctors of that day, anyone could voluntarily put their arms and legs, strange markings on their skin. And because of this, it became a spectacle, the court situation, where these judges came. And of course, because the actual charter for Massachusetts had been taken away, and this was from Charles II, of course, after Oliver Cromwell's dynasty had died. And you have this idea of autonomy and or autocracy in the sense of the Charles, and they removed the self-governing charter of Massachusetts. So there's another problem. The government is not operating properly. You actually have these judges sitting on the bench, and they're creating law on the bench. They're not following the common law. This is the first big idea in New England of judicial supremacy, of being able to change the laws on the bench. And this is where these judges were doing these things. They were going back to the old superstitions of determining who was a witch based on whether they could recite the Lord's Prayer, based on whether they knew certain aspects of either doctrine or prayers. And these kinds of superstitions were cautioned against. Even Cotton and Increase Mather, they warned against using spectral evidence. Now, they did not intervene in the trials and probably should have a bit more, even though they had no jurisdiction to do so. The church could not go in and just take over a judicial trial, a magistrate trial. There was a jurisdictional separation between church and state. And yet, Increase and Cotton Mather did lean on the side in New England of having a hierarchy above the churches just so they could prevent such a situation. And in fact, it worked providentially, even though it was a travesty, it worked providentially to the fact that there were many who opposed what Cotton and Increase Mather wanted. And thus far, that was the seed and the germ, actually, of the Declaration of Independence through Pastor Wise in Ipswich. But the idea is, here you have this travesty take place. And what a travesty. 10 of the Christians, some of them women that were part of an intercessory prayer group, as far as we can tell, that were praying for the entire village to come back to God and to Christ. So it's a backslidden area. We'd use that term as evangelicals, a backslidden carnal area where people were already upset with one another. Parents were not following the scriptures. They were not going to individuals independently. The pastor himself would actually name people that were in the congregation as his enemies, dealing with private conversations and rebuking people from the pulpit. I mean, there were so many mistakes here. No wonder the devil, in a sense, had an open door to come in.
You said that the children in the pastor's house, Samuel Parris, yeah, they were in the basement playing with these things. Do you mean like voodoo dolls or something like that?
They were, Yeah, they were looking into a glass to see who their future mate would be. They were dealing with, and these were dark arts that were being used at the time, and all of a sudden the coffin would appear in this glass of water.
So like divination type stuff.
Yeah, like divination. Yep, that's right.
Okay.
And so
yeah.
This was happening in the pastor's own basement. So what an unfortunate symbol. It's a great lesson for us today as Christians. We're never going to see Reformation in society unless we see churches and families begin to govern in godly ways internally, and we begin to deal with situations properly, because that's going to be a real problem. And this is what we see in Salem. So in essence, the Puritans, by the mistakes that they made and being held to a higher standard by God, this was a clear violation. They violated their own laws. So instead of it being the Puritans' philosophy, or the fact of the absence of common law, as one article I read said, there was no such thing as innocence till proven guilty, till after the Salem witch trials, or something like that. That's crazy. That's not true. But they didn't follow it. That's the bottom line.
Hmm. And Increase Mather, as I understand it, did help put the brakes to the whole thing when he returned and said, "We got to go back to the biblical perspective that crimes must be, you know, proven by two or three witnesses, and you can't allow this spectral, you know, witnesses. Oh, I saw Deacon so-and-so, and he was playing with a witch," or whatever.
Right, exactly. And I think that both Increase and Cotton put the caution on, and Increase did as well. But, you know, it's like anything else. And we see it even happening in our culture today, where really what put the stop to it was the Governor Phipps, when he became the new governor under the new charter after William and Mary, the Glorious Revolution in 1688. And by 1692, this had come. Once these girls started accusing everyone they could hear of, because they became the specter, everyone was going to see it. It was almost like an entertainment show, which was terrible. They named Governor Phipps's wife as a witch. Well, you know, when the governor's wife, that's it, it's over. He shut it down. And it's like someone else says, you know, if it's happening to somebody else, okay, it's not such a big a problem. But then all of a sudden it happens to you, and it becomes a big deal in your own backyard. And that's what happened. And it's unfortunate it had to take that turn before these trials were set back and people were released. Because really, if they had followed common law, even though some were involved in the occult, no one would have been put to death.
At the end of Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard's Killing the Witches, they have a little section with the author's notes, and it's something, some remarks from Bill O'Reilly, very, very insightful, talking about how today's cancel culture is like the whole idea of the witchcraft hysteria that did occur for those few months, you know, in Salem in 1692, and were stopped again once the biblical principle was put back, you know, in as the operating principle. But this idea of cancel culture, this idea of the accusation is all you need, and then you ruin someone's reputation. We have about a minute left. In some ways, this, you know, the Salem witchcraft trials, you know, it's still part of the American experience as, like, never go down that road again.
That's right. And I like some parts of his conclusion in the book as well. The critical aspect of this is we always have this kind of hysteria in any culture. And the more we remove the moral base and the biblical base of law, all law is religious, and it will implement some presupposition and premise. And the further we go away from Christianity and an absolute premise for law, the more this kind of thing will be able to take place.
Your website is plymrock.org, as in Plymouth Rock.
Yep.
.org.
Okay. PLYMROCK.org. Correct.
If,
and you can get our materials,
yeah,
on the Pilgrims and many other things about America's Christian heritage.
Okay, good. And how about a closing thought on this whole issue from Paul J.?
Well, I think in this case, many of us as Christians and evangelicals have to recognize that our lifestyle of being lived before God in a holy way and following his precepts is one of the best deterrents of what could happen in a culture. And we need to continue that and then make sure we articulate as well as we can the fact that all law must be resting on key premises that have been proven true throughout history.
Plymrock.org. Thank you, Paul. All the best.
All right. God bless you.